You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome to the Well-Fed Women podcast. This is episode number 295. I am your host, Noelle Tarr of coconutsandkettlebells.com. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer. I'm here with my co-host, Stephanie Ruper, and today Steph and I will be discussing social media and the social dilemma, reverse dieting. That's probably going to be a big topic. I have a lot to say. Progesterone and PMS, and what to do when your practitioner recommends dieting, like eating 1,200 calories a day. Before we dive into all the goods, this is your reminder to go get our special Well-Fed Women box with Grassroots Farmers Cooperative, which is packed with all of my favorite cuts of meat and bundled at a 15% discount. This is exclusive just for this community. Obviously, I love Grassroots Co-op and what they are doing for regenerative agriculture. They have set up a system where you can order incredibly delicious, nutrient-dense, 100% pasture-raised meats directly from a lot of small-scale family farms in the U.S. directly from their website. So when you buy from their website, it's a bunch of different U.S. small-scale family farms. In the Well-Fed Women box, you'll get an assortment of my favorite cuts of meat inspired by my recipes. I try really hard to make easy but delicious recipes that are good for bulk cooking and meal prep. So the cuts are affordable, they are easy to cook with, and they give you the most bang for your buck. It's not like you're going to have a surprise $30 cut steak in there. It's not happening. For example, you'll get a couple pounds of grass-fed ground beef, which can be used to make my taco skillet. And the chicken thighs can be used to make one of my sheet pan recipes. There's a sirloin steak in there, which is a pretty good cut, an affordable cut, bacon, and more. And it's all stuff you're going to love and use. And this is all bundled at a 15% discount, which I'm excited about because that's an incredible deal. So to get the Well-Fed Women box, go to grassrootscoop, that's coop.com/wellfed, WELLFED. There is limited stock, no subscription is required, and you get a 15% discount on that box. Last I checked, it was $130 for what is bundled. Sometimes there'll be slight variances in, like, okay, you will get two things of ground turkey, or you'll get one, or you'll get ground chicken, based on what's available, because with sustainable farming, it's not a production line where the same thing is produced time and time again. So last I checked, it was like $130 price point, which is really great for all that meat that you're going to get. Again, it's grassrootscoop.com/wellfed. Hi, Steph.
Yo.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Can you tell that I have a cold? Is this obvious?
Not really, no.
I'm on the tail end.
Aww.
So, which it's kind of, I was pretty proud of myself because I was not at all nervous about getting sick in a pandemic. I was like, yeah, whatever. It's just this is a normal cold. But it's actually my kid got it because she went back to preschool. Did you see, since you're so into my Insta stories now, did you see that my child fell down the steps?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough. Quick update. I really appreciate everybody was so thoughtful and was messaging me. I posted something. We took her to the ER. Essentially, my daughter fell down the steps, banged her head really hard, and she was in her socks and slipped. And it could have been related to the fact that she was just coming down with a cold and maybe a little dizzy. Either way, she knows to hold onto the railing and all that stuff. It's just one of those little accidents, and she fell right into somebody's lap. And I mean, it was just like she just, boom, hit her head. And it swelled up really terribly. Huge bump on her head. And I freaked out and called, you know, my husband, and he is pretty well versed in that kind of stuff. So we talked through it. And by the end of the evening, he was like, we're taking her to the ER because she was there are a lot of other symptoms. She'd thrown up. So anyway, we took her to the ER, and I had posted a picture and was just like, hey, can you please pray? Like, we just don't know, you know, head injuries are scary. And so anyway, I really appreciate everybody reaching out. It was a lot, and it's been a lot since then, like watching for symptoms and checking and making sure everything's going good with her. She did have a pretty serious cold, and she's been a stuffy. Everybody knows when kids are sick, they are clingy and irritable and sad. I mean, just being sick sucks. So she's been a little emotional, I would say. The last few weeks, and unfortunately a lot of the symptoms for like concussion or brain, you know, a head injury and all that kind of stuff correlates with anxiety and constantly like emotional and lashing out and like a lot of things that toddlers already are. So It's been trying to decide, like, is this her being a toddler, is this something more? But luckily it hasn't been more, and she's, after, like, I think it's been about 2 weeks, she's finally, the bump is still there, but it's definitely better, and she seems to be better. Some of you sent me some really interesting information about concussions, and I think that it's something that I started looking into it, and I feel, it felt like one of those things where you didn't know. So, like, for example, say you had an autoimmune disease, you were diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, and you all of the sudden found a world, which is the autoimmune AIP, or you found, you know, you all of a sudden saw the AIP world, and you started maybe listening to this podcast, and you started hearing, well, wow, so you can do hormone tests. So it could be a gut infection triggering it. Like, oh, and you can do hormone testing. Like, wow, you could actually work on the root cause. And like, so, you know, it's a whole, like, whereas before you didn't think there was anything you could do about it. So that's kind of the epiphany I had, which is a lot of people hit their head, you know, whether it's rock climbing or they were involved in sports. Kids hit their head a lot, falling down the stairs, getting involved in sports. And a lot of times things check out fine. And actually one of you emailed me and was like, hey, I actually hit my head. I fell off my bike and I thought it was fine. I checked out of the hospital, but I started having these symptoms and like anxiety and lashing out. And, you know, I had the inability to focus and concentrate well. Headaches, you know, these reoccurring headaches, but everything checked out at the hospital. They said I was fine. But if you go to a concussion specialist, they will, she said she, you know, rated a 2 out of 10 or something like that. And by doing proper concussion recovery, like everything was better. And so somebody emailed me a contact who I am going to see if I can have her on the podcast, but she's a physical therapist that specializes in head injuries, both ones that kids can get, but also things that you can just get, like falling off your bike and all that kind of stuff. And is that the underlying root cause of some of these unexplained symptoms? So anyway, I was just like, what? Like, just, so if anything good came out of it, I'm really excited to explore this more and like potentially interview this woman, if she says yes, and talk more about concussions and how that can impact you as a kid and just throughout your life if not properly addressed. So anyway, hi.
Is that my cue? Hello.
I heard you come off of mute.
I had to slide back over to the mic. I was sprawled out. It's like, all right, here we go.
I can see that too. Yeah, I don't know. It just hit me like, oh, maybe that could be a lot. Have you ever hit your head or been involved in sports or anything like that? Where that happened?
Well, I did have a broken nose my entire life and not know why.
That's true.
One time at dance, I was doing a gymnastics thing, like a backward, like a back walkover or something, yes. And somebody kicked me, and I fell on top of my head on a really hard, really hard floor. But I think, I don't know. I guess it could be related, but I don't know.
See, I haven't, but I think it's pretty normal for, it's not normal, but it happens.
Really lasts the rest of your life?
Yeah,
I mean, like, it stands to reason. We have thick skulls, so we think we're fine, but the brain is literally the thing that constitutes experience. So you want, you know, in all the ways you possibly can, whether that's physically or, like, you know, taking care of concussions or your neurotransmitter balance or hormone, you know, in all the ways. You just want to tender, loving carrot, you know.
Speaking of your brain,
Nice transition.
What did you think about The Social Dilemma, the new Netflix documentary, which I made you watch yesterday because I was like, I would like to discuss this on the podcast. Have you watched it?
Yeah, so I'm really glad I watched it. I've been really into what they said on the documentary for many years and aware of kind of the issues. And I do think, and yesterday watching it again just sort of reminded me of what an urgent issue it is. But I do think it's one of the more, personally, it's like the one that I'm kind of chipping away at and the one that I think we so much need to address as a society, which is the ways in which we are being used and manipulated by tech companies and don't even know it. And the scariest part is it's not even how media influences us, because we know that media influences us. We've always known that. But there's this really precise feedback that they get, and they just continue to lure you on. And one of the most productive ways for them to keep you on their apps, which is how they make money, is to make you angry. And specifically to feel outrage. And that just horrifies me. And I think also a lot about what's going on with coronavirus right now. Like, the political tension in America is so high. And I think it's been rising part because of this. And there's data to show it quite a lot.
I thought it was interesting that the data that showed the divide. Did you saw that graph where it was just like the divide has grown bigger and bigger between like political parties, and we're both more like, to me, I'm always like, is it really getting worse, or am I just noticing it more?
No, it's getting worse.
It's
quite bad. Yeah. I've written essays on this because I'm all constantly trying to get people to empathize with each other's viewpoints. That's like my shtick. It's one of my shticks. And it's really hard. It's really, really hard. And it's hard because, you know, like they do mention this in the documentary. When you Google something like climate change is the example they use, the results you get come up like are based on where your location is. Like, it's not even, it's based on everything subjective. It's not just based on who you are friends with on Facebook and what, you know, your political party is, because it is based on that, but also where you are in the world. If you're in a state that tends to be skeptical of science or the progressive, you know, agenda or what have you, you will get Google search results that, you know, cater to making you increasingly distrustful of those things. And the same goes for the opposite, right?
That reinforce your beliefs, essentially. Reinforce what you already believe.
Yeah. And so, like, everybody looks at everybody else and says, how could they possibly believe that? But you have to understand, like, it's not just reading one news article a day from a biased news source. It's every single thing you encounter when you look at a screen. And like now in coronavirus, our lives have become screens, right? Like 80% of my social life is on screens right now. And I think I might give myself the treat of going like deleting the apps off my phone for my like birthday for a couple weeks and just like seeing. I remember one time when I was like 14, our computer broke or something, and I couldn't go on the computer for a couple months, and it was such a great couple months. So I just, yeah, it's horrifying and so important, you know.
Yeah. Essentially, the summary of the documentary is, we are the product. Our attention is being sold to advertisers. And these tech companies are doing everything they can, because they are focused on profit and continued growth, to keep our attention on that page, whatever we're looking at, to keep us coming back to the phone and staying on our phone, staying staring at the screen. And the more time we spend on the platform, the more they get paid. So it's quick, constant, like, here's another thing, here's another piece of content, that immediate, like, the immediate roll into another video. You know, it's what are they watching? What can we show them more of that is like what they are already watching? And how can we keep them sucked in and on the phone? One of the interesting, one of the quotes was like, how can we Like, how can we take more of their time? How can we get them to point the phone at their brain for a longer period of time? And when I heard that, I was like, ugh, like, so true.
Yeah. It's called the attention economy. Like, they compete for your attention and they monetize it. Yeah. And like, using the apps and especially clicking on ads and clicking on videos and the next recommended videos, like, it's just constantly hooking you and using you, and you're feeding back into the system. And so, you know, turning off notifications and just thinking so intentionally, like, you don't want the apps to be using you. You want to be using them, which is kind of a struggle. Yeah, but it's so important, because again, like, they're selling you stuff and it sucks, and I'll laugh and I'll joke and I'll be like, oh, haha, like, they got me. They showed me this dress and then I bought it. And then, like, that's just, that's not just it. They're also, like, making you hate people different from you. And, like, wow. You know, it's not even that you're friends with people who are similar to you, the content that you're shown when you search for things, you know, and that just blows my mind. And so we just all have to think so much about how we can be intentional when we engage these things.
We got to get out of the bubble. I think it's like, you got to take off the glasses and see what's happening, because that one of the enlightening analogies that they made was, it's essentially like everybody has their own Truman Show on mm-hmm. the internet, in Facebook or whatever. And so you're shown your own reality. You're shown your own facts. Every time, you know, you have this false sense that everybody agrees with you. How does anybody see it opposite to me? And you're easily manipulated once you're in that state, and you become even more ingrained, less tolerant. The intolerance that is happening right now is sickening. The assumptions that are made about both sides is, like, disgusting. And mm-hmm. so once you get deeper and deeper into that, you can't hear out anybody else, and you just think everybody sees everything the way you do. You become angrier at, you know, anybody who doesn't see the things the way that you do, because you assume everybody's, like you said, reading the exact same things that you are. And I didn't think about it until you said this, but with the coronavirus, it's crazy how much that dial has been turned up.
Mm-hmm.
We are so less involved with people in person, and all of our social life is on these screens. And guess what? That means we're just being sold our own Truman shows even more and more and more. Yeah. It's terrifying. So one of the things that I think why this is important to discuss too, I think what this is doing to the next generation is terrifying. For me as a parent, of a girl, mm-hmm. and one of the things they were talking about is how, you know, we're basically training and conditioning a new generation of people who, when they're uncomfortable and lonely, they have a pacifier and it's their phone. And they talked about how there's this whole new generation that is more anxious, more fragile, more depressed. They're less comfortable taking risks. They're not getting their driver's license. The amount of people who have gone out on a date or had any sort of romantic interaction is dropping rapidly. So, like, a generation is changing. And they gave these stats that suicide rates and self-harm rates for preteen girls, both age groups 10 to 14 and 15 to 19, has tripled. And that increase in 150% happened right about around 2010, when social media was available on phones. So the idea of a middle schooler, I mean, I can't imagine. And we've kind of joked and said, like, how could, like, being on social media in middle school, it just would have been so tough. Like, I can't imagine. Middle school was already tough. But thinking about middle schoolers being on social media and using that, you know, like, being, like, needing the likes and the bullying, and how most teenagers or 10 to 14 year olds aren't really going to say a lot to somebody in person. Some people will, you know, some kids will, but most kids aren't. But man, kids are going to be mean in comments on social media, because their brain isn't fully developed. They're dealing with a lot. And if they've been hurt, they're going to hurt others. And so, yeah, I can see how comments just can negatively impact somebody, like a kid's health, and affect them for the rest of their life. You know, it's a whole new form of bullying and tearing each other down. And just like needing that social approval, you know, a new level of like needing external attention from other people and getting your worth from a like or, you know, what other people think of you. So it elevates what other people think of you as the most important thing in your life.
It really does. And, you know, I talked about how the leveraging of your emotions, right? One of the powerful ones is outrage. Another one is self-doubt and low self-esteem. And Instagram gets this on me. I am so mad at it. And I just, I avoid the feeds. So I intentionally avoid the feeds. And the search tab, you go to, like, I had never searched ballerinas on Instagram ever. But the first time I went to the search tab, somehow it like knew that if it showed me ballerinas, like I wouldn't be able to look away because I love dance and I miss it. And also I have this like whole history of having a body that wasn't right for this art that I desperately loved. And I like, it sucks me. And it's one of the only things that I struggle to stop scrolling. And it's Instagram just like knew. And if it can do that to me, and I have all of this, you know, I've worked so hard on my resilience to this kind of messaging, you know, just like imagine what the power it has with, you know, young girls. So
yeah, you're talking about the Discover tab, like the little search where it just feeds you a bunch of random content.
Yeah, I want to like search for my friends, and all of a sudden I'm seeing, you know, videos of these like, you know, very culturally stereotypical, traditionally unrealistic, you know, standards of beauty. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I just wanted to find my friend, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Your Discover feed is probably much better than mine. Mine right now is all Real Housewives drama. Like, I'm like, how did you get here? How did you know that I would want to know that people were reacting?
I'm saying. I also see a lot of Anne with an E, which is great. So, Noelle, if you haven't watched Anne with an E.
Oh, I have.
Everybody.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, great.
I watched Anne of Green Gables as a kid. So I was like, on it. Anyway, it's scary. The recommendations they made for kids was spot on. I was kind of mulling it over. I couldn't sleep, actually, one night, and I was thinking about. And look, I'm a mother of a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. My children, I can control 100% what they watch. So I'm in a nice state right now, and I can think about all the things that I want to do and whether it's going to all work out. I don't know. But I'm pretty set on, like the guy said, he's like, we are militant with our screens. He's like, our kids are not on social media. They're not even allowed to be on social media until, I think somebody said 16 or 17, which makes sense. I'm like, yep, check. And he said, no screens go into the bedroom, which I've actually already thought that one through right when my kid, when Stella was born. I was like, you're never taking a cell phone into your bedroom. Like, I just, nothing good comes from that. So like, and I was even thinking about, okay, well, we'll create like a cool docking station where everybody puts their phones in, docks it downstairs at a set time. And that's one of the things they recommended. No screens in the bedroom. Do not take your phone to your bedroom. Do not get on social media until you're 16. And I get it. The whole thing is like, you know, other kids are on it and that's an issue, but I would rather my kids suffer because they're not, their friends are talking about it versus them being on it. So it's just a lot. It's going to be working out a lot in our family. And they also said, like, be open with them and discuss with them, like, okay, well, how much do you want to be looking at your phone a day? And let's make sure that we're tracking that and we, you know, regulate that. And just, of course, talking to your kids about the problems that it could potentially have. Anyway, it's just a lot. It's a good documentary. Please go watch it. I would love to do an interview about it on the podcast, but maybe I can ask Tristan. If you feel like you're doing all the right things, yet you're still struggling with digestive issues such as gas, bloating, cramping, do any of these sound familiar? Digestive enzymes is a great place to start. Enzymes are the workhorses of digestion. They break down your food into usable macro and micronutrients. As we've talked about before on this podcast, stress can inhibit proper digestive function. And on top of that, we actually lose enzymes as we age. Masszymes is a formula from Bioptimizers. It's what I use and what has actually been recommended to me by my holistic doctor. The reason it's so well known and recommended is because it's a 17 enzyme full spectrum formula with five different kinds of protease, which is the enzyme that is the catalyst for the breakdown of protein. And undigested proteins can cause a lot of gut dysfunction. Most do not have protease, so that's why Masszymes is so special. We have a killer deal for the Well-Fed Women community, of course. This is the best deal. You will not find this on their website. Go to buyoptimizers.com/wellfed. That's buyoptimizers.com/wellfed. There you'll find up to 48% off packages. So they have a lot of different discounted packages you can try. Buyoptimizers has a money back guarantee. So if it doesn't work for you, just let them know. Again, that's buyoptimizers.com/wellfed. And then use the code WellFed10 to save up to 48%.
Question number one.
Question number one is from Aurora. My dearest lovely ladies, I came across the idea a few years ago and was wondering what you two thought about it and its use in recovering from restrictive eating. The concept was built around the idea that jumping between binging and restricting can cause the metabolic distress and huge weight fluctuations and may be detrimental to overall health and well-being. Specifically, I believe the concept was developed for people who compete in bodybuilding and bikini competitions, and when you starve yourself for weeks and then binge on a huge amount of junk food after the competition. This idea is basically that you can increase calories slowly by about 50 per week by adding fat and carbs, since people in competitions tend to eat lots of protein to recover your metabolism without shocking your system. I read about it back in 2012 when there was only one man talking about it and forgot his name, but the idea seems to have blown up since. There was never any scientific studies done on this, so these sources are all hearsay, but I want to know what you two think. Is it healthy? Ideal for those who have struggled with restrictive eating or HA, so that's hypothalamic amenorrhea. I have my own opinion, of course, but I'd love to hear all sides of the argument. She says, apples. I like crunchy ones, but to be honest, I have always preferred vegetables, so hashtag team no apples, please pass the broccoli. Broccoli's great. I feel ya. Okay, so I got into a rabbit hole with this morning and was researching reverse dieting. So let me just give my quick overview of what it is, and then I'm sure Steph was going to have lots to say about it. Whatever I don't cover. Reverse dieting is basically a method that involves slowly and strategically increasing daily food intake, all in an effort to basically raise your metabolism because it has been damaged by the dieting. And like Aurora mentioned, this is largely championed by people in the bodybuilding world. But, you know, we're talking about this and we're going to discuss this within the context of, can this work for somebody who has been yo-yo dieting or just restrictive, like restricting their calories or just, you know, is trying to come off of or maybe suffering with something like hypothalamic amenorrhea. So I think it's important to first put it out there that dieting, this is well documented, dieting, specifically drastically cutting your calories, it does not work for long-term health. The latest stat is 95% of people who successfully lose weight will gain it back within 3 years. And then 30 to 65% of those people will actually lose weight, but then gain it back and gain more back. And if you ever researched yo-yo dieting or looked at a graph of yo-yo dieting, you can see this, how somebody will restrict their calories, they'll lose weight, but then thereafter, like if you're looking at their weight on a graph and their metabolism, their weight will go up, their metabolism will not return to baseline, but their weight will go a little higher and then they'll do it again. And so they'll lose a little weight and boom, goes even higher next time. Why it does not work is that when you drastically cut your calories, your body goes through some very real physiological changes. Changes that occur when the body is chronically underfed and chronically stressed. We have talked about this a lot because, and I want this connection to be made, chronically undereating is a form of chronic stress. Your body, when you cut your calories, your body downregulates your metabolism. because it needs to adapt. It starts to halt proper hormone function, including sex hormone production. And then oftentimes your cortisol rhythms become completely out of whack. So your sleep is compromised. Your recovery sucks. So if you think you want to still do things in the gym, ha, good luck with that. You're fatigued constantly. And then you start to develop very serious nutrient deficiencies. Magnesium is a big one, which is needed to support the stress response. But it also impacts neurotransmitter function. Your immune system is downregulated and not able to function properly. Your gut can be negatively impacted because nutrient deficiencies like magnesium and the downregulation, and this can be caused, like, those nutrient deficiencies can result in the downregulation of secretion of your digestive organs. So think about the downward effect of that. When your food's not properly digested, it's, you know, large particles of food are going to get into your gut and disrupt your gut microbiome. Not to mention the very real impact that this has on your brain. The Minnesota starvation experiment shows us that men who were intentionally starved, they were put on a 1,600 calorie a day diet, lost their minds. They focused nonstop on food. They were obsessed with food. They had very odd behaviors around it. And even after, they engaged in self-harm. And even after the experiment was over, those things, that mental anguish, did not stop. They were still obsessed with food. They still had a disordered relationship with food. That was after eating 1,600 calories a day. So that doesn't even address that. So eventually, you know, when you diet, you start eating again because it's very hard to maintain that. And then when you do, your body is imbalanced, your metabolism is wrecked, and your body quickly puts on weight because that's what it's primed to do. So reverse dieting enters the scene, and then look, now you can diet and then get back to your calorie intake without gaining weight. Okay, maybe. In general, my initial thoughts are eating more and supporting your body with nutrients is a good thing, right? So if someone doesn't feel comfortable like ramping up their calories immediately and feels more comfortable with slowly titrating it up and allowing your metabolism to adapt and recover, go for it. I say, great. Just get on the path to start eating more. So I do think from a physiological perspective, it might potentially work for some, but there will be variations from person to person. So here's an example. There was a study done at the Mayo Clinic. Researchers brought 16 normal weight people into their lab for 8 weeks, and they served them huge meals that provided 1,000 extra calories a day. That group of people, there were huge variances in what was actually gained. Some people gained under a pound, and some people gained up to 9 pounds. And so why is there this variation? One is genetics, and two is something called non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which I think they like to call NEAT, because it's NEAT. People start to twitch a little more and get up and walk around, you know, shake their shoulders and, you know, do things to actually get rid of some of that excess energy. And as Aurora mentioned, I think something important to note is that there's zero evidence and research saying that reverse dieting works, but there is evidence about this metabolic adaptation and NEAT and what happens. So metabolic adaptation is essentially that adaptation that your body is downregulating your metabolism and other processes, your thyroid function, so that your body can conserve energy. You also downregulate NEAT, your hormones downregulate. And so I saw this really cool analogy. A simple way to look at it is like a game of fetch. You throw the ball, the dog's eventually going to catch up with the ball. It's how your body works when you cut your calories, and then your metabolism sort of kind of catches up with that. So I think the red flags is, I think what we're missing here is any sort of, you know, this is coming, right? There's no sort of acknowledgement that you absolutely have, you know, like, you have to work on mindset. What got you here in the first place? Why were you dieting so hard? And, you know, what was the deal? What was going on? What's your mindset about your body? What's your relationship with food? Why did you feel like you had to cut your calories so low? So, like, it's a kind of a dream world where it's like, we diet, we're perfectly fine, no mental issues, and now we slowly up our calories and everything's good. And it's like, well, no, like what? Like that doesn't address any sort of mental, emotional issues. So in certain many situations, like with women participating in fitness competitions or women who have restricted for a very long time, women struggling with HA, if you have been under eating, you are likely at a weight that is too low for your body, and your body needs to gain weight. That's the other part of it, right? Gaining weight is not a bad thing. And in our society, we praise being thin and lean and dieting and the ability to diet and not let yourself go. And yeah, keep going harder and look at her. Like she just ran a marathon and ate a bagel. Like that's all she had for the day. But why is that? And what is the cost here? So is it worth it to you to tank your health, downregulate your hormone function, you know, all those things that I listed before, including your physical and mental and emotional health, which is not addressed here, to appeal to the diet industry and a diet industry, follow everything that they say? I mean, who in your, this is the question I had to ask myself. Who in my life am I trying to please right now? Who is in my life that is saying I need to maintain a weight that is too low for my body? Who is in my life right now that's saying you really should cut your calories and get a six pack? And is there anybody that's going to walk away if I don't have a six pack? And the answer is usually no. So, in order to implement this, you kind of have to act, you have to be a robot and not have any mental and emotional issues. And you also have to constantly weigh yourself. You have to weigh your food. You got to measure because you're slowly titrating up. I mean, your calories are very controlled. Yeah. So those are my thoughts. What do you think, Steph?
Noelle prefaced this podcast with, I have this question. I think you're going to have so many thoughts, but I'm not going to have any thoughts that are like particularly divergent from yours. I'm curious if, what was Aurora? Is that whose
yes.
question this was?
Yeah.
If the person Aurora read was Matt Stone. Do you remember Matt Stone?
Oh, I do, but I don't.
Matt Stone was a huge, huge advocate back when I first started doing all this stuff. Of people eating a lot more. And he said a lot of our metabolic issues came from a chronic under eating and over drinking water and eating too much like fruits and vegetables. And so we were sort of diluting our systems, upsetting our electrolyte balance and not eating enough stuff. Something that I've always found very useful. I really liked the pushback that he offered. And even though he was a bit more on the fringes, he did make a point that I thought was very interesting and that I've carried with me since then. Which is if you're cold, like women are cold so often, right? It's so common for women to like feel cold and guys are fine, right? In the wintertime and like the fight about the thermostat, like the lines are always drawn. I'm not saying they're drawn like certain ways, but generally speaking, I think women tend to, want to heat things up more anyway. And I was often always very cold, my feet always freezing. Right. And he said it would be better to have a cup of ice cream than a cup of hot tea if you were cold, because you drink hot tea and yeah, it's hot when you drink it and it feels good when you drink it, but you're putting a bunch of water in your body and your body actually has to work pretty hard to keep cold water warm. And so it takes calories to do that. And
it's another diet
down.
Culture tip.
It's another diet culture
drink
tip.
Cold
drink
water
ice water
to burn calories.
Drink ice water, a glass, 8 ounce glass ice water every morning when you wake up. It's gonna be a thing now. Yeah, so a new thing, a revitalized thing. Anyway, but if you had some ice cream, like you would have you would be consuming the fat and the carbs that you needed to actually keep warm. So I do think. All of which is, that's just a concrete example of how this thinking about metabolic dysregulation and under eating and stuff has it's real. Like it's real. Your thyroid hormone levels change. I know people, tons of people in the fitness industry, they'll tell you all day long. Not everybody, of course, but there's a vocal contingent who says, you eat this much or you exercise this much and that's that, right? Like there's no such thing as losing your fat burning potential and stuff, but they're totally is. Like all the stuff that you mentioned, I'm absolutely 100% on board with being real physiological stuff. In terms of what to do coming out of it, I agree with you that that specific kind of approach is just not right for me. There are people in my life who love counting calories, and like it doesn't bother them, and they just enjoy knowing, and they're biohackers, and they look at like their sleep time on their watches and stuff like that. And they're into it, and that's cool. It's just so not for me. It's so absolutely not for me. Like I'm like such a control freak about my like professional and existential space. Like in my eating space, I just can't. So, that would not be for me. But if, you know, Noelle and I talk a lot with women, and I have historically throughout my time working with Health to Empower in our community, so many women who have gotten into the state of you throw the ball and it takes 3 minutes for your dog to get it and come back, right? Because the metabolisms are lagging and the thyroid is low and all that sort of stuff. The NEAT is low. So how do you get it back? I say this a lot. The speed at which the stuff in your body comes back online depends on like how hard you throw at it, to keep the fetch analogy. Like, you can down a bunch of high caloric foods a lot quickly, and that would probably be a little bit more of a jumpstart to your system. I remember one time Chris Kresser shared an analogy on his podcast, and this was like, again, many, many years ago. But he was a voice that I really enjoyed listening to and learning from. And he talked about this one patient who had a lot of chronic health issues and was, you know, really perfecting his diet. And then one day he had like a box of pizza, and that was it. And then he had beer and pizza for a while, and like that was it, because calories are sometimes the thing, you know, or carbs or fat or whatever. So you can go really hard and really fast at it, or you can take a slow approach, and you can also take a very precisely measured approach. My personal preference is somewhere in the middle. I pay loose attention. I ballpark it. That's the approach that I talk about in my program, Weight Loss Unlocked. Like this sort of ballpark figure, understand where you are, but you don't need to rigidly control it. That's what I sort of like to do. But to each their own, you know. And I do think that it could be good for all of us to play with that and to see if it feels good for us to be eating more, because the more calories you eat, the more nutrients you can get, right? And that sort of thing. It's kind of important. Food is the stuff that keeps us going. So, yeah.
I agree. I think you could choose either, you know? You have to figure out what's right for you, and you also have to address the mindset piece of it. So if you're going to slowly titrate your calories up, you're going to need to also recognize what got you into that position, and how can you also work on your mindset and repair your relationship around with food and your body, and have a more realistic outlook on all of that. So, yeah. Okay. Second question is from Kaylin. Can you discuss taking progesterone pills during the second half of your cycle to help with severe PMS symptoms and painful heavy periods? My naturopath recommended this to me, but my gyno, who I'd need the prescription from, says that that would not help and to take the birth control pill instead. I know. Hey, can I make a quick disclaimer?
Yeah.
Hey, we can't. So we're not doctors.
Thank you.
And we can't.
I wanted to do this too.
Okay. So we can't, like, we're not qualified to discuss your medical condition, or I have no interest. I'm sure Stephanie has no interest in refuting your doctor's opinion or advice. So I think what we can do is give general things, our opinions about the female body, and what we know from our experience. And then, you know, we can obviously make recommendations about finding a doctor that is better aligned with your health goals. But we're not doctors, so.
So your gyno is probably sees the pill as a like more regulative way of looking at your cycle, right? Pills are usually a 4 month or 4 week long cycle. Sometimes, you know, they go for longer, but typically it mimics a menstrual cycle a little bit. But a pill is has progesterone in it. All pills, all birth control pills have progesterone in them. Some of them have estrogen added, depending on what formulation works best with your personal hormone profile. And so your gynecologist, I don't see much of a difference between what's being recommended here. I definitely think whoever you're working with should listen to your needs and questions and want to discuss these things with you. I would hope, at least. But a birth control pill would be a progesterone, could be a very low dose progesterone. There are those. And there are also different variants of progestins. These are synthetic progesterones, progestins in birth control pills. Some of them act more like estrogen in the body, some more like testosterone or like an androgenic profile, and some more like progesterone, right? So they definitely could maybe look for something that suits you. And then this progesterone pill during the second half of the cycle, if you prefer that to a pill that is on a 4-week loop and it doesn't interfere with your menstrual cycle, you know, I'd like, or your naturopath doesn't think it would, then I guess it's worth trying. I see these both as hormone interventions. You know, this the 4-week long cycles for a normal birth control pill do have a placebo week built in, like it's a sugar pill for you to menstruate. And so basically you're looking at a 3-week pill with some amount of progesterone and maybe some estrogen in it, as compared to this 2-week progesterone pill that you're talking about. I think that they're probably both interesting alternatives worth looking into if you want to sort of manage your symptoms while at the same time looking at other ways of, you know, addressing the more longer term underlying stuff that could be going on with your hormones or your reproductive physiology and what have you. You know, severe PMS and painful heavy periods are really problematic and often attributable. I won't say this exclusively because I have no idea where your blood test results are. And even if I did, I, you know, wouldn't be able to say that for sure, but they're often linked with estrogen. And so taking progesterone can balance estrogen, although the processes that lead to the development of tissue that creates heavy and painful periods are ongoing even in the beginning of the cycle. So I think it's, I would say, like, I'm not going to write off either of these options. I think that they're both worth talking about. Yeah, but I would still be looking at longer, sorry, I brought this up because I would still be looking at longer term strategies to address any sort of underlying hormone imbalances like excess estrogen or estrogen dominance or something like that. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, like neither of these options are not actually treating the root cause. If you're looking for an immediate relief of symptoms, it's worth looking into what I think what your naturopath is recommending. But if you want to work on the root cause, it's neither of those things are are going to resolve that. What I would recommend doing, because this is a lot to discuss. We have an episode with Dr. Jolene Brighton about the pill, irregular periods, and post-birth control syndrome. It's episode number 213. I think that will be really enlightening because, unfortunately, some of the side effects, and it'll just help you learn about some of the side effects of the pill, because being on it can actually lead to estrogen dominance, which could very well be the underlying cause of what's causing your PMS symptoms. But it also can result in nutrient deficiencies. It does drain magnesium. So long term, it can actually... So while you're on the pill, nothing is resolved. When you're off the pill, those issues still remain, but they can actually be heightened or worse once you get off. So that's definitely something to consider. Essentially, and I think the best steps moving forward is if you can, get a proper hormone test like the Dutch test so that you can figure out what's going on hormonally. You can figure out if you do have if you're having a problem detoxifying estrogen or if your progesterone is low or whatever. Because I'm not totally sure if you've gotten that information yet. So you have to have that information. Information is power. You have to have that information about your hormones before you start treating it with any sort of medication, any sort of And I'm a, yeah, no, yeah, this is right. I was about to say, I wanted to assume something about your age, but if you're having a regular cycle, you're not close to, I'm assuming that you're not close to menopause. So I think the second step would be to figure out is this PMS or is this PMDD? Because that's important too. We don't have a lot of research about PMDD, but it is very severe and it can be very invasive in your life, and it's, you know, crippling depression and all the things. And so I think getting a proper diagnosis is key as well. Essentially, PMS is caused by an imbalance in hormones. And like Stephanie mentioned, estrogen dominance is often a factor, and it can play a role in PMS and PMDD. Missed a D there. PMDD. So the number one thing that I think is important is to get the estrogen out if you are struggling with estrogen dominance. And really all of these suggestions, all of the things that you would do to help balance estrogen and get estrogen, excess estrogen out of your body, are also going to help with general hormonal balance. Excuse me, which is great. So number one, ditch. If you're on the pill, get off of it. Just talking in relation to estrogen dominance, because estrogen dominance can be actually, precipitated or made worse by the pill. Stress is a big thing as well. So an interesting thing to note here is that when you're chronically stressed, it does impact all other hormones. And estrogen dominance can happen one of two ways. It can mean that you have a problem getting estrogen out of your body and that you're overexposed to estrogen, or that progesterone is too low. And chronic stress can cause low progesterone, which then in turn would cause estrogen to be higher. So you have to work on both of those things and cannot write off low progesterone being part of the issue as well. The third thing is really to clean up your beauty routine. There is zero federal regulation around any cosmetics in the United States. Most cosmetics, most conventional cosmetics, have known endocrine disruptors in them. And endocrine disruptors have been linked to estrogen dominance, thyroid disorders, and even breast cancer. And I do wholeheartedly believe that you've got to reduce your exposure to endocrine disruptors. And they are also in household products like cleaning products. That's why I'm very passionate about Puracy and their safe cleaning products. Another big thing is heavy metal exposure. So heavy metals are contaminants. It's not something that you would necessarily find in your personal care products, although it is a big issue because aluminum can be in deodorant, an ingredient in deodorant, in deodorant as an antiperspirant. So get that out. But heavy metals, some preliminary research does show that heavy metals can act as xenoestrogens in the body. So you've got to get those out. And that this is why I'm unapologetically passionate about what Beauty Counter is doing. Everything on their website, everything that you get, skincare and makeup, anything that they produce as a cosmetics company, is completely free of any known endocrine disruptors, carcinogens, and they also do very rigorous testing, both of raw materials and end products for heavy metals, which a lot of people don't know that, like, the heavy metals can be contaminated during that manufacturing process, not to mention packaging. Packaging can be an issue as well, so glass is important as well. So shop, you can go to, my personal link is beautycounter.com/Noelle Tarr. And then the last thing, support liver and your gut function. So estrogen has to come out of the body. And if your liver is sluggish or your gut, you have some gut issues, that can actually lead to estrogen dominance as well. So liver support is all the typical things that we recommend here, like eating cruciferous vegetables, eating foods rich in heme iron. Cruciferous vegetables, by the way, is like broccoli, cauliflower, that sort of thing. Heme iron is rich in B vitamins. That's your grass-fed meats, your organ meats. Sulfur-rich foods, so that's your pasture-raised eggs and your onions. Magnesium helps detoxify estrogen from the body, so I recommend a magnesium supplement. And then supporting gut function, of course, anti-inflammatory diet, probiotic foods. The only other thing that I will add is, when it comes to separate studies that look at PMS and resolving it naturally, there is research that shows, and this is also can tie into PMDD as well. Research shows that magnesium supplementation can reduce PMS and PMDD symptoms, and it works even better when it is paired with vitamin B6. And separately, vitamin B6 and calcium in studies have been shown to reduce the symptoms of PMS. So those are two things to think about. And you can also toy with taking Vitex. That has some really interesting literature around that. There's one research found that Vitex improved PMS and PMDD in all 8 studies that were compared, and it found it to be just as effective for treating PMDD as oral contraceptives. That's huge. So you can experiment with that, and then also experiment with cycle syncing. So getting into a flow where you know your hormones and you're supporting proper hormone function, supporting the excretion of estrogen, for example, around ovulation and when it's at its peak, and supporting progesterone and estrogen, and specifically supporting your body as it's about to start your cycle in that second half of your cycle by resting more and reducing stress and eating foods that are really great for your body when it's in that state. And you know, that's typically when you get a lot of your PMS symptoms. And learning to go with that flow and choreographing your life, your food, and your exercise around that so that you're not like working against your body and fighting it constantly. So I think that's a lot, but start somewhere and just start with a couple of things. I'm doing hand motions right now, a couple of things. I'll link to my estrogen dominance post and then my natural ways to treat PMS and PMDD post, and that will give you a couple of places to start. Just start with a couple of things and see if there's some, hopefully, some immediate relief. In the past year, I found tremendous benefit from bathing in red light, otherwise known as red light therapy, with my Joovv device. That's J-O-O-V-V. And I have some huge news from Joovv, including new devices and a discount. Red light therapy is one of the most effective health modalities you can use in your home. It's helped improve my sleep, reduce fatigue and headaches, and it's incredible for reducing inflammation and stress because studies show it stimulates energy production in the body by improving mitochondrial function. It literally improves how your cells function, and that translates to so many other things in the body, including improved thyroid function when targeted at the thyroid. Joovv is the leading brand when it comes to effective and safe red light therapy. They were the first ones to isolate red and near infrared light and make it accessible and affordable for in-home use. As of today, Joovv has launched their next generation of devices, and they've made huge upgrades to what has already been known as the best red light therapy systems on the market. Joovv's new devices are sleeker. They are up to 25% lighter, and they've intensified their coverage area so you can stand as much as 3 times further away from the device and still get the recommended dosage. They've also upgraded their setup for the new devices with quick, easy mounting options. Plus, the new devices include some really cool new features like Recovery Plus mode, which utilizes a pulsing technology to give your cells an extra boost to recover from tough workouts. And then an ambient mode for a calmer, lower intensity light to support circadian rhythms at night. If you're looking for a new Joovv device, this is the time. Go to Joovv, Joovv.com/wellfed and use the code wellfed. You'll get an exclusive discount. Yay, I'm clapping. On Joovv's newest devices with our code. This discount, it's a percentage off of each device. And it is for a limited time. So jump on it, get this discount and get your red light therapy in your home. Again, it's Joovv.com/wellfed. Question number 3, and this will be fast, hopefully, is from Christine. She says, "Hi, Noel. First, thank you so much for handling the topics of women, nutrition, and fitness with such professionalism and grace, because for so long, women have been so underrepresented when discussing diet and exercise. My question relates to..." Thank you so much for that. That was very kind. My question relates to caloric restriction. I have Graves' disease, and I'm currently in remission and off all meds. Yay! I'm trying to get pregnant, so have recently been reviewing your podcast, researching the infradian rhythms, and focusing on a lot in trying to balance my cycles. I show some symptoms of estrogen dominance, so I have been addressing that with diet and exercise and acupuncture. My endocrinologist that manages my thyroid, however, is adamant that I must lose weight. 5'4", and she wants me in the range of 120 to 135 pounds. I'm well outside of that range. That said, I work out 5 to 6 days a week. I count my macros. I stick traditionally to 1,800 calories per day and make sure to eat 140 grams of protein. I also eat over 100 grams of carbs. My endocrinologist recently told me she'd like me to restrict my calories to 16 and to continue to reduce down to 1,200. When asking her justification for such a low calorie count, she stated it's because I am short. When I pushed back on this and discussed my workouts, weight training, etc., she simply tells me I'm eating too much and have to figure out a way to drop weight. As a reference point, my biomarkers are all well within healthy ranges, including A1C, cholesterol, CBC, TSH, T4, blood pressure, respiratory weight, and heart rates. My cycles are regular with a borderline short luteal phase that I'm currently addressing with acupuncture and infradian rhythms. I love all this data she has on herself. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So empowering. I am a pelvic floor physical therapist, and I'm quite familiar with all things pertaining to women's health. So I'm a bit at a loss for the calorie restrictions she's asking for. She's excellent at managing my thyroid, but at this point, it feels like she's wanting me to hit a magical number on the BMI chart rather than helping me manage my health. Questions are, is 1,600 calories a day too low for somebody trying to get pregnant? She said, I am not getting pregnant due to my current weight. I find this a little disheartening, as I know for certain, confirmed with my OBGYN, that I am ovulating. My endocrinologist, number two, my endocrinologist seems to think 2,000 calories per day is way too much food based on my height. And number three, I'm considering ignoring her advice and sticking with 2,000 calories per day up from 800, hitting the minimums you talk about, and giving this 3 months in addition to continuing to work with my acupuncturist to address the estrogen issue and lengthen my luteal phase. Is this reasonable? Thanks, Christine.
Yes.
Disclaimer.
Yes.
We're not doctors.
Disclaimer, we're not doctors. I have no interest in contradicting medical advice of any sort. I'm not going to say that. I have no interest in contradicting medical advice of any sort. But it seems reasonable. I think it is more important to have healthy biomarkers and hormone levels than it is to have a specific body weight when you are trying to conceive and to do so healthfully. And I think it's probably best moving into a pregnancy that you're focusing more on nourishing more rather than less. And I have a feeling Noelle has thoughts and feelings about that. 2,000 calories a day for someone who's 5'4", like admittedly, some people maybe more shorter than taller on the end of the spectrums do need fewer calories than otherwise, but 2,000 is not 3,000, you know, it's not a huge ask. I don't think it's pathologic at all. These are, Noelle and I picked these as minimums for a reason, and people can titrate down, but I think also 3 months is quite a reasonable amount of time. Also looking at fertility, just throwing this out there, takes two to tango. So make sure, you know, we see a lot of women spend a lot of time playing with their own fertility and stuff, but it's always best to check your bases and make sure that however you're conceiving and with whomever, that's a effective, you know, that's all in good, healthy working order as
well.
So that's really all I
examined. Yes.
Yeah. So that's really all I have to say.
Yeah.
What do you have to say?
I will just say to reinforce, like, we're not in the business of contradicting, going against what your doctor is saying. I think that one of the things we do have to recognize and what we are fans of is finding second opinions and finding a doctor that is well aligned with your health goals, what you know to be best for your body. And if something, doctors are great and they're very well experienced, but they also are just people who have an opinion. And second opinions, other opinions from other doctors are also available to you. So if something doesn't sit right with you or doesn't feel right, you are not under any obligation to force yourself to follow that diet recommendation. And I'm sure it's awesome that this doctor is really helping you with your your thyroid function. I think that that's amazing. And what a blessing that you are off of medication and that you have found this doctor that helps you with this. But it's also possible that you could sit down and say, I hear you. I appreciate those recommendations. I'm also going to find a second opinion and I'll let you know what comes of that. So you could potentially find, you know, it sounds like you're already working, you're doing the things you need to do. You are a physical therapist. So you kind of have a really great base knowledge, of the body and physiology and that sort of thing. But it might be worth teaming up with, you know, registered dietitians are trained in nutrition and how the body functions like that. You know, you could team up with a registered dietitian. You could team up with that is aligned with your goals. You could understands the damage that diets can do. And you could also team up with like a functional medicine practitioner to help do a little bit of some additional testing or whatever. Like I think there's a beautiful relationship between having a functional medicine practitioner and having a conventional doctor and being able to work with both of those individuals. And that's kind of how I've operated throughout my life, just so that you can get two opinions and then decide what to do from there with your health. So I think that what's important to note, and I will just reinforce from all, I don't need to repeat, but I will just repeat a small chunk of it to help people understand. This is going to be my sound bite. Okay. As you lower, so doing the 1200 calories, what would happen? Let's just hypothesize. As you lower your calories to lose weight, your hormone production lowers. This is proven in the literature. This is not just speculation. Hormone production lowers, things slow down. Studies show that thyroid hormones lower, testosterone lowers, leptin lowers, and both cortisol and ghrelin, of course, increases. And that cascade, this is while you're cutting your calories, and that cascade of hormonal consequences eventually leads to, you know, you have that metabolic adaptation, your metabolism slows down, and your body essentially reduces reproductive hormones because you're no longer suited for it. This is, again, proven in literature. It increases stress hormones so that you can fight or flight for your food. And it boosts those hunger hormones so that you can increase your motivation. And it does all this by, you know, at the same time, delaying thyroid function. So if we look at what we know in the literature about what this drastic calorie reduction is going to do, I think we can see that a lot of those things are contraindicated to having a healthy pregnancy or preparing your body for pregnancy. So you can take a look at that. There's a lot of studies, but there's one, and I will link to it in the show notes. It's called The Effects of Intensive Weight Reduction on Body Composition and Serum Hormones in Female Fitness Competitors. And it investigates the effects of a 4-month fat loss diet in normal weight females competing in fitness sports. And they achieved that deficit by decreasing carbohydrates and increasing exercise, which is really what most people do when they go on a diet. So in the study, free T3 dropped, testosterone dropped, leptin plummeted, and estradiol plummeted as well. And from all the things that I said before, I think we can know that it's unfortunately those changes when you do these crash diets. 95% of the time the weight comes back and more. You do long-term, your metabolism can be wrecked. It does not just magically return back when you start eating again. It is lower for a while, unless you intentionally, you know, try reverse dieting or whatever, to try to get to fix your metabolism, bring your body back into balance. So I hope that this episode helps people to see that weight and weight loss isn't a good predictor of health or the health of somebody's body, because we can see that yo-yo dieting and strict, you know, calorie restriction, all that, like, people are actually pretty good at that. People are good at following a diet for a short-term period, getting that before and after picture. Here's August 2020, and here's December 2020. Yay, before and after, 20 pounds lost. But what about December 2021? That's what I want to know, you know, or December 2023. So we're really good at those short-term shifts, but the long-term shifts, the long-term health improvements, it's not a quick fix. It doesn't come like that. And it's a detriment to your health. And so I would be, what I recommend people do if they really want to be healthier is to always look at other biomarkers of health. So figure out what those things are, figure out what's important to you. Of course, you listed a bunch, which is awesome. Track those, keep tracking those. And keep tracking. You can look at other, you know, you can continue to do full thyroid panels. You can do a Dutch hormone test and also check in, like, how's your mental and emotional health doing? That's a biomarker of health. That is a biomarker of health. Where are you at mentally and emotionally? And track those things to bring about health in the best way. Pregnancy is scary and it's hard, and it's hard to trust yourself because there's a lot that goes on, and sometimes people don't get pregnant, and it has nothing to do with the fact that you are, you know, whatever, this weight and not that weight. It can be due to a lot of other things. So don't turn that into something like, oh, if I just control my weight, I'll get pregnant, because it's not, that's not reality. Do you have any other thoughts? You're still on mute.
Okay, I literally put myself on mute. I wasn't on mute, and then I put myself on mute.
We are so professional here. After 5 years, folks, still
Noelle, can't. I was like, I'm going to nail it this time. I was like, I'm going to nail it, and I put myself on mute and tried to talk. This is what I said. That was really thorough, and your response was fantastic, and I want to vote for it. I'm downvoting my response and upvoting this. It was very thorough and fantastic, so thank you.
Yeah, okay. I can come off as a little intense or like, you know, harsh sometimes, and I hope that it's not coming out that way. It's not beneficial. And when I just want to stop people from going down that rabbit hole before they do, because it can be awful. Awful place to be. Speaking from experience, it's an awful place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Follow Stephanie, Stephanie.Ruper on Instagram. I'm Coconuts and Kettlebells. When is this coming out? Am I done with cookies yet by the time this episode comes out? I think I'm going to call it Craving Cookies. My Craving Cookies will hopefully be out next week. I'm going to launch it on my Insta. So next time we record, I'll mention a link where you can download it. But you can also follow me on Instagram. And yeah, we love you guys so much. And make sure to join our Facebook group, the Well-Fed Women Holistic Facebook group. Just search us on Insta, and I will not Insta, on Facebook. Sorry, I'm making you get on Facebook after we just talked about the social dilemma getting off of Facebook. But if you can figure out a way to only log in and just like just come in and ask a question whenever you need us and then leave. How about that? But we're there, and we'd love to see you there. So for more from me, you can go to coconutsandkettlebells.com also. And we have a book. It's called Coconuts and Kettlebells. You can get it by going to coconutsandkettlebells.com/book. We will talk to you next week.